My name is Greg. I'm the founder of Fabler. So my background in general is also in IT. So I've done some projects for large companies in Europe. One of the projects was like really automated warehousing with robots. That was work for Ocado. It's like a competitor to Amazon here in Europe, or at least they are trying to compete with them. It's in top 100 largest companies in UK. And some cool projects that we've done there was you have an app, you place your grocery shopping, and you get that order delivered to your doors in 15 minutes. I think this is not need in US, because in US you drive everywhere and you pick up your shopping. But in Europe, it was pretty really cool projects to do. Yeah, people were super excited, you know, to do shopping and get this in 15 minutes at your door. Yeah. So, and then I've also done work in game dev. And here is where this transition from IT into Fabler comes. We have released a few story games. Those were pretty successful games. We had like at the moment almost 20 million players worldwide. And making these games happen was really, really hard. Yeah. In general, game dev is super hard industry. It takes you a year or 2 years to produce something that is later consumed in a week or 2 days, and you never can keep up with the content production. So in the middle of 2022, when first Stable Diffusion 1.4 was released, we already knew a little bit about AI because of our previous experience for the IT companies. And we've realized that Stable Diffusion 1.4 maybe wasn't great, but we could see that you could actually apply it to gaming and make it work. So we started first working on the pipeline for creating characters. Then we've created pipeline for creating scenes. And by the end of the year, we've created a proof of concept game that was entirely made by AI. Now I think this is very kind of achievable, but at that point it was pretty kind of amazing to achieve this. And for some people, when we were showing this is actually AI made, they couldn't believe they were thinking it's a scam. Or then ChatGPT revolution started, technology started progressing. And now I think no one will deny that you can make a content in the game that is fully AI made. Yeah.
Awesome. So when we're looking over it, it's Fabler.ai. So you have some demos on there and stuff like that. Can you just walk us through the stage that the tool is at right now, and then maybe, you know, expand on that long-term vision of where you see it going in the future, what you're trying to develop right now?
Okay, cool. So at the moment, you can use Fabler to actually generate storytelling with minimal effort. So what you will be able to do is without experience, if I take my mom and I sit her in the front of the PC with the simple instructions, she will be able to generate a story with the characters, with the narrative, with the voiceovers and the music, and export it as the video. But there is a little bit trick there. We actually record the video from the game engine. So what we do underneath is we actually build a game, and on the server, we record a gameplay as a video, so that you can see, you experience your story yourself. And here's where the vision is. So our vision is to actually enable people, like democratize story game production. Yeah. So the storytelling module is the first phase. In the next steps, we want to add the gameplay modes. So really in the same fashion as you now create a story with minimal effort, you can generate games like a mystery games with choices or decisions, quiz games, and some like a textbook like gameplays. And we are actually at the moment also working with some companies. We can see that this process already works in some way. So we have one company from Warsaw that took Fabler, and previously they were spending 6 weeks on producing a simple cutscenes for their puzzle game. And they already could automate that process from 6 weeks to a day. So I think that this ultimate vision, what we want to achieve is to take a random person from the street and make that person make story game, yeah, like in 15 minutes. And I think that this goes to kind of this reference, like if you look at YouTube. So in 2010, if you go to a random person on the street and you ask that person, oh, do you want to be a movie producer? They will have this mindset of like, this is not really possible. You need to have all of this equipment, screenplays, cameras, there's some team required. But what YouTube has done, they've shifted mindset of people to idea that everyone can be a movie producer. Yeah. So now you have 33% of Gen Z thinks that they will be the content producers. No one actually denies that you can actually start making movies like Mr. Beast does. And so this is very accessible. When today I will tell to any of you, like, come on, let's make a game. This is still not very available to people. You say, okay, I need to have an artist. I need to have some writer. I need to have a programmer. I need to have all of these people to create a game. So the idea behind Fabler is that we want to solve that problem and make it accessible to everyone. And ideally, we will trigger these individual creators in the future who will decide to make games. We can see that people really, really care about featuring themselves in games, which is very interesting. So like people nowadays have this, their digital identity avatars. And when they create experiences, they typically ask, can I place myself in the game? We have such features coming. We actually already have them. They are not available. So you can upload your picture and create character that game character that looks like you. So you can create narrative with yourself and your kids in it or with your friends, and you can storytell. Plus you can make that experience as interactive.
That's awesome. So you're trying to make like the YouTube for gaming in a way, game creation.
That's the long-term vision. Yeah. I think that there is long way to go because you need to create this, like there is, I think, three reasons why people would want to create this. So what we experience now is when people use Fabler, they tell us that it's magical, it's really cool, I really love it, but we need to give more meaning to them. Yeah. So first thing is make them earn cash. So we need to create economy where they, if they create something, they can get an return from it. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, let's make you famous. You've created a game and that game was released. Was being, for some people, being famous is, you know, 400 people played it, yeah, and they are super happy. If you go to Reddit, like new YouTubers space, you will see that people are so excited about even having 100 subscribers, 300 subscribers. They appreciate that small audience that follows them. So being famous, and the third thing is that to give them a sense of community, so make it more collaborative. So we're working on the feature where you can have the library of assets, and we envision that we can have one creator create. It's not even necessarily related to AI generated content, but having artists that will upload his own art and someone else will use that art and use AI to generate variants of that art. So if you, let's say you are an artist, you've created a character, you upload that character to library and Fabler creates the variants of that character that can be used in someone else's games. And then maybe we can go back to the first step, which is let's make a return to all of them. Yes. So everyone who uses Fabler is happy because they make a return. They have the sense of community, but also they can be noticed. Yeah. I think people have this big need now today to be noticed by others. Yeah. So.
No, very awesome. Now what would one of these games, well, I guess a couple questions here is, are these games available right now in the beta program, or are you just doing sort of the story part of things right now and the gameplay is going to come later?
A gameplay part will come later. We've already done a work to prove of concept this and prove to ourselves that we can make it, and we can. At the moment, we are taking it in kind of phase approached. So the storytelling is the first thing. We need to get it right. Yeah. So if people can create meaningful stories, everyone can tell his own story with the tool, and we can have some game dev studios use it to actually tell stories for the games. So you are making a puzzle game, you are not expert in creating narrative, but then I can get Fabler, and Fabler will generate that. In general, in games, what you have these two types of gameplay. You have real gameplay when you play a game, and then you have the meta gameplay that creates a need to play a game. Yeah, and you have different types of meta gameplays, but you also have this very strong story meta gameplay. Yeah? So you, let's say you play Witcher and you think you play it because you like to, you know, the gameplay mechanics, whatever, but there is also the story that you want to uncover. And that's the reason why you play the game in the long term, and it provides the retention, let's say, mechanism, so people are coming back and playing the game every day. So the storytelling part is first. Once we get it right and we see that what Fable produces is meaningful, we will start implementing the decisions gameplays. And so we, during that beta phase, already we discovered multiple needs among the creators. Yeah. So for example, what I've mentioned earlier, initially our impression was that people will be really excited about generating things. Mm-hmm. But what it appears is that it's this repeated feedback that people want to actually upload their own images or have an image of the living room and transform it into game art. Yes. So something that we discovered is that people really want to implement their digital identity and their environment as digital kind of entities in that stories. Yeah. So this is what we are working now on.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a lot of influencers out there just use social media to promote themselves, but I've never heard anyone saying, well, I'm going to create a game of myself and use that to get more influence or followers. So that's kind of interesting.
And this is exactly what I wanted to, what I was initially saying, is that people don't have this mindset. Same way in 2010, no one would ever consider themselves, I'm gonna, like, obviously it's different. We always gonna have this, you know, professional studios making professional content, but we think that there is this space to empower, like, if you go to Reddit spaces, you'll see people asking questions. Yeah, I'm thinking of doing games after hours. Is it hard? Will I be able to do it? And the answers are, oh man, that's gonna take, like, if you spend 40 hours a week, you probably can create something meaningful in a year, but don't, like, try to make it small, like small project. Yeah. So yeah. It's still in the same space, making games in a very similar space than movies production or movie content production was actually in 2010. Now with the Sora release from OpenAI, I think a lot will change. Yeah. But I think it's always, it's like with everything that changes, you always have a space for people who will do it very professionally. I think that AI will never replace professional movie making, because people will still want to see this kind of spark of people in the movie. And once they will understand it's all AI, they will not be that interested. They need to have celebrities that they can follow, but it's not like it will be one or the other. Yeah, you're still gonna have big industry for the AI generated movies, and probably the professional, normal, classic way of making movies will shrink, but it doesn't mean that it will disappear. Yeah. And with the games, I don't think that there is any other future than having, you know, like individual creators making games at ease without having, you know, large teams of people, designers, outsourcing, etc. So that has to be the future. Yeah. And I'm sure that we can make it happen. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, like, so what does one of these games look like? It sounds like you're already testing the games behind the scenes. Like, what are the first games that you're going to release look like, and what would you like them to be eventually as well? Like, is there any kind of example that you can go over for the audience out there?
Yeah. So first iteration, we are focusing on the games, such in the story games. Market in general is huge, and one of the most popular gameplays, especially for the female audience, is a story decision games. So where you experience narrative, you make decisions, and that the decisions somehow change how the narrative goes. And the coolest thing about Fabler is that because we control all of the narrative context for you, you can make that decisions very, very meaningful. So the problem in producing such games today is that to manage all of that tree of dependencies, it's just hard. So what people do is they typically make decisions that are not really meaningful. They change little in the game or they are faked. So with Fabler, you'll be able to create like very complex decision tree. And all of the decision can be meaningful because you have minimal effort to create this. Second gameplay that we also envision is quiz type gameplay, where you kind of experience a narrative and you are being asked question and you can find whether the answer were right and wrong. We have some cohort of beta testers that come from the educational background. We can see that. So they look at Fabler as the means to teach kids at school or educate someone else. So this is another thing. And the future, future, we envision that we could implement gameplays such as hidden object or point and click gameplays, like anything that has a story as backbone. Yeah. So we are not focusing on kind of gameplays where they're action oriented. It's all about the story and using that gameplay to tell your unique story to the audience.
So it's kind of like a choose your own adventure game to begin with, like yeah. Those type of games?
Yeah.
Got it. Cool. But you could have a celebrity on there, an influencer, and then you lead them on the journey, right? Like down the path. For the
yeah.
Story.
And that is actually what we also found out during testing, that like when you test with people, they do typically two things. They either place themselves in narrative, so they're creating themselves and creating story with themselves. And the second thing is they try to create celebrities and create stories with celebrities and known people and some alternatives. So definitely this is what people want to do. They are kind of focused on the characters that are meaningful to them.
Awesome. And can they, like if you're doing one of these adventures, can you record it so you can play it again? Or you can replay what the adventure was?
Yeah, sure.
That's cool. So you could play the game, record it, and then upload it to YouTube or TikTok or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So with the story game production, we also are looking at this vertical of, because you have influencer or content, let's say a creator on YouTube, and they have their primary content that they produce. So there's like a long form video, or whatever other content, let's say Twitch stream. And then you have these different means to promote that content. So we are also looking at this vertical. Can we take this long form content production, that this is the main source of income for the creator, but then he could utilize Fabler to create a playable experiences that are actually connected to that primary content. So that people who experience this content will say, okay, I want to find out this narrative is connected to that video. Let me see that video. Yeah. So I don't know if this podcast is the only thing you do, but you could imagine that if you produce some long form content, Fabler could be means to promote that long form content in a little bit different way.
We have another, yeah. I have another channel. I do like 3 news stories a week on anything AI related. They're usually like 5 to 7 minute videos. So yeah. So how would that work? Like say you have a video about, you know, a Sora AI news story, right? About Sora, how Sora was just released by OpenAI. How would Fabler fit into that?
There's difference in terms of audience and needs. Yeah. So when we are talking about this promoting long form format, so let's say we are talking to the person that is releasing a physical book. Mm-hmm. So what they would like to create actually to promote the book is storytelling that gives some elements of that book. So you have like a, let's say book is about, you know, how to be more confident. Yeah.
Okay.
And the book itself is a book, but uh-huh. You need to have some means to promote it. Yeah. And the general kind of the difference here is a little bit different. That person that created book not necessarily wants to create a games. So what they would prefer to do is to upload the context. So you upload, you know, the contents of a book, okay. And then you want Fabler to generate some playable experiences for you in the background, share a draft with you, so you can just approve it and share it with you, with the audience so they can play it, yeah? And if the people awesome. Like the content, like educational content in the story, mm-hmm. they might buy your book because they like the gameplay. Yeah, and it's a little bit different, and because people who may typically, if you make this primary, if you are making podcasts or long form video about AI, you actually want to focus on that, on production of that content. Yeah, so here we can see that in Final Vision, you can get Fabler to like the zero effort game production, where you will just upload your video, we'll do the transcript of the video, we'll get the images of the video, we will get the assets, we'll generate the variants of the assets, try to generate some draft of the story for you, we just get it on the email and say, yeah, I like it, let's approve it, and let's share it, yeah? So it's like a really zero effort, yeah? So it depends on who you talk to, our different needs, because if you have a person that really wants to self-express with Fabler, they will want to have a control. If you have a person that actually focuses on something different, they want Fabler to do like this zero effort production so that I can just share it with others and promote my main things. But it's still, you've produced something, this primary content that was shared with Fabler as context so that he can create those story, interactive stories for you.
Really awesome. Like, it's such a different way of thinking about things. It's hard to get your head around when you first hear it, you know, like a game based on content that you upload, and the example you're going over, a long form video on YouTube. So it's crazy, and a lot of content creators are looking to promote their stuff. You know, they've got a lot of good content, you know, whether they have a long form video and they want to create a short out of it, or they can create a game out of it, you know, they've already done the hard work. So if you just upload a transcript, which are the transcripts are easily created on YouTube anyways, you just copy that and put it into Fabler, it'll create a game for you. That's pretty exciting, you know, to be able to do something like that.
It all depends on the content, yeah, and the content that we focus on first, yeah. So, like, if you have, let's say, you have this Roblox creators, and the Roblox creators create just, you know, they record their gameplay in a Roblox and they tell story. So now what they can do is they can cut those video into shorts, share it as shorts. But what they also could do is upload the video to Fabler. We will do transcription or copy transcription and take, you know, particular scenes, generate variants of that scenes and put it together as a game that they could use to promote this primary content that they have. And very important thing is that if, let's say, we talk about Roblox creators, they also have their distinct digital identity. So those games should feature their characters, yeah, their, you know, their unique avatar, because other players know them in Roblox by the way they look like in Roblox. Yeah.
So how did you come up with this gaming idea? Do you have a background in, like, you just like video games and thought of it this way? And
no, like, we have interesting mix here at Fabler, because we actually combine two worlds. Yeah. So my background is like this classic IT. And long story short is I've released one small game, a very short game. That was, I think, in the year 2000. I've made it after hours. It took me 1 year to make this game. And this is example. Yeah, as when after hours working on a very simple game. It's called Enigma Spy Adventure. I think it's depublished now. So, you know, yeah, like, if you Google it, you will find the content on that game. It was we called the developer Bad Pixel Games. And I worked with my friend, was like over a year after hours, and that was like probably 20 minutes of gameplay or something. But that game generated, like, in first 2 months, like 1 million plus something installs. So it was, got pretty popular. Apparently, I'm still getting emails from people, will you release the second part of the game? So that, and that was like years ago, yeah? Yeah. And for the other games that we've released later, we people also keep emailing us, like, are you gonna do remake and so on. So, like, if you make a good story, and there are also some other really cool things about making good stories, yeah? So when we've released a game called Lucid Dream Adventure, there was a story about disabled girl on the wheelchair that stepped into world of dreams where she was trying to save her mother. Because, like, it's a little bit, I'm not going to spoil it, yeah, if you're going to play it, maybe. But in general, the story, this is a little bit like Alice in the Wonderland, but a little bit changed theme. Yeah, so you have disabled girl that struggles with problems at home, and she steps into World of Dreams, and then in the World of Dreams she can walk, and she's trying to save her mother. In the process she learns about her father, and so on and so on. Yeah, so and we got hundreds of emails from people saying that this game has made change to their life, or that they suffered loss, and this game was so cool because it helped them to deal with this. And this is like you're making a story. It's just a story, but and for you, it's like if you work on that game for a year or two, it just becomes really kind of like another day in the office, and you kind of start getting detached to the story and so on. It's very hard for you to assess whether the story is good or not anymore, because you spend so much time on it. But then when you see that some people were touched by just a story, because the game is more mainly about the story, and it kind of helped them to deal with some of their problems, it's really cool. And I think that this will be also, I think, the biggest success of Fable, if you could get people to tell their stories in the way that they could touch others and make their life now a little bit better in some way, or to make them. So coming back to your question, it's kind of like we are combining two worlds, because by maybe small coincidence, we've released a game after hours that was pretty successful by its own. We've invested zero in marketing and got like millions of installs. Then follow-up games were also pretty successful. We won multiple awards. We got awards from Google. Google actually showcased our games in London during like indie showcase event. So that was really cool. We have very good relation with Google actually because of that. And then I always had this mindset of optimizing things, and I could never kind of understand why it takes so long to make a game. It sounds so simple, and even viewers consider it simple. Yeah, like I have to tell you that this is pretty kind of it's hard to deal with when you get a player who played the game and the game lasted 8 hours. It took you 2 years to make game, and then he tells you like, why it's so short, you know, can't you make it longer? How long it took you to make it, like 2 weeks or 3 weeks? Like, really, this is the account, because people don't understand making games, it's super hard. And when you have it's not just like, in general, our team is super kind of effective in making content. We were always super effective, yeah. But then when you look at some companies, such as I was talking to the VP from Disney Gaming, I think they were having a game released in Asia, story game, Disney story game. So he told me that they have team, and it's a story game, so it's like a linear, yeah. Okay. So they had a team of 60 working on a content for year. They were designing content for a game for a year, and that content was consumed in 7 days. And what he told us is that story games are really hard, because the better content you produce, the quicker it gets done by players. Yeah, and that's what we've experienced. Actually, we suffered on that those platforms, because in Lucid Dream Adventure, the total gameplay was like 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And people were consuming it on day zero, so playing eight hours straight. And then what you get is those platforms actually promote games that are good over a week, so people like, but then we see people are finishing in a day. So the better game you produce, this like, and that's the problem with story games, that the story is, once story is over, the game is over. When you make a game where you have some like repetitive mechanics, you play levels and you have like 10,000 levels and you keep playing, you can play it for a week, 2 weeks. Once you are bored, you will put it away, like Candy Crush. Yeah, you can play it forever. Yeah, but then when you try to create a story around the game to make it really long and supply players with content for months, is just like impossible, like even for the company that 60 people, you know, on board. Yeah. And the companies like CD Projekt, they are making games for like 7 years, and then it's 40 hours of gameplay. Yeah, so
yeah, it's crazy. Like Grand Theft Auto, like how many people work on that game, you know? Like it's been just godly amounts of money to make something like that. That's a whole nother level. What for these games that you're created, like the games that you created, did you just made them for fun? Did you try to sell them as well, or how did that go?
No, like we've monetized the games and we made, let's say, decent return. Maybe that was not a return, mainly because the monetization in the games we've released was more of unlocking the full story. So when you, if you make a proper game where you can keep monetizing and grinding a player, you know, for months and months and months, they can spend like hundreds of dollars. We could not apply such monetization strategy to such game, but we've made a return, and all of that return was actually invested in what we make now. Yeah. We also have investors, like angel investors that joined us, but like we believe that this project is the biggest thing so far that we've made. Yeah. And all of everything that we've done so far will be very small.
Yeah, we wish you the best of luck. It sounds like a really awesome project. What is, like, if someone wants to create a game, will they be able to monetize by selling the game on Fabler.ai eventually? Or what's the revenue stream for the creators?
Yeah, so in terms of revenue, definitely we have to make it the way so that creator feels that he is a part of the system. Yeah, I think that we have to figure out it with players what works for them, or creators what eventually works well with them. I think that the YouTube way of monetizing is something that should also work for Fabler. This is our current idea, but there is also this idea of if we can create the community of creators who create together, and someone, let's say, creates a art assets that he wants to monetize, there can be this additional revenue streams where the economy works. Yes, so you are, let's say, artist, you've created some art, you publish that art on Fabler, someone else took the art or purchased that art from you. So then we will actually go for more like a Roblox-like approach where you have some currency inside of the game that you can spend or either exchange for the real money. Yeah. But it's still too early to tell on what we will decide. But definitely we have to make it work for everyone. Yeah. So creators need to feel that they are kind of making return and not we are making return on what they produce. I think this will never work, you know, on trying to monetize the content without the creators. Yeah. So it will be a revenue shared with them.
What does the pricing look like once creators are able to create games on your platform? Is it going to be a monthly subscription? Is there a free tier? How does that work in terms of pricing?
Yeah, so one of the things that we have done from the start is to produce the system so that we have the free tier so people can use it for free. So we are actually relying on our own models. So all of the art models and LLM models are open source implementations that we have trained, and we are running them on our own infrastructure. And thanks to that, we can control the cost of the generation. And thanks to that, we can actually offer a free tier, because if we rely, let's say, on any third-party service that provide you with the art generation or text generation, that will just get super expensive. So kind of the core strategy of ours is to be able to offer it to individual creators for free. But then obviously if you are a heavy creator and you are making return, we are planning to have some paid subscription plan.
So where are you on the roadmap right now? I know we've kind of talked about like the pieces that you're putting together, from image creation to music to all of this stuff. What does it look like right now, and what are the current projects you're working on right now, and what are all the pieces that have to be put together before this is all said and done in a complete project?
So at the moment we are in the beta phase of the storytelling module. We are also working with few companies who can game development companies who already started using Fabler for the meta content production in their game. We also have a company that actually does not intend to use Fabler as the output in their game, but what it enabled them to do is to mock up the idea of the story really fast. Yeah. So what you do is you can actually generate, instead of, you know, let's do a storyboard, let's talk to a writer, will create, you know, the script, and then you, you know, concept designer will create concepts, and the artist, what they've done was single person sat down and generated the idea of what the narrative should be, show that narrative with the voiceovers, music and everything to the director, and the director says, yeah, I like it, or I don't like it. Yeah, so it just improve that process. And at the moment we are 100% focused on making this story creation experience excellent, and there are a number of features that we are implementing based on the conversation. Yeah, so first is being able to upload your own kind of reference images and generate game characters that look alike those reference images. They've asked us about ability to edit narrative by hand. At the moment, it's not possible. So they want to actually, you know, generate the narrative and be able to edit it, change this narrative. And there is other smaller features, such as we want to upload our own music, we want to change them, we want to configure specific voiceovers for characters, etc. So this is the features we are working on. This all related to storytelling module. Once we'll complete that part of work, we will, next step will be the decision gameplay that we'll be implementing here.
So how are you dealing with, obviously, this global crisis of copyright concerns with music, voices, and things like that? What kind of tools are you using on the back end, and how are you dealing with those concerns?
So we, like, in general, all of the models that we use are trained by ourselves, and we are using synthetic data to do this. Yeah. So in general, it's kind of iterational process. Yeah. So we started with the base open source model. The question is, what happens to the base foundational open source models, whether they will be killed or not? At the moment, I think everything is going in favor of AI, but we'll see. And what we really do is, we have this, at the moment, now it's large. We have very big data sets, because you take it in iteration. So first you generate, you know, like a small data set, you train the model, you see what the outputs are, you generate larger, then you do permutations of that data sets, because that doesn't work, and so on and so on. And after 6 months, you have pretty good data set, you train the model again, you see, okay, it doesn't work, and you learn. And there is multiple different practices that you can do to improve it, improve the output. Yeah, I think that initially people were saying that training models on synthetic data sets won't work, but I don't think that's the case. Yeah, you can actually make it work. We are making it work, and I believe in very in specific use cases, what we do is better than some of the models trained on the human art in general. So this is a lot of work. Yeah. In terms of what will happen to this, you know, in general, AI content copyrights, I don't know. We just, you know, we bet on the AI being, you know, free to use. If the regulators will take it into direction where they will actually prevent use of the, I don't know, even synthetic data to train the models, like, we're gonna face that reality. Yeah, I think that Fabler is also not just about AI generated content. This is interesting kind of learning from the beta tests, that people not necessarily have to generate things. It's more about the ease to create the narrative, and where it places all of the things together, and kind of AI acts as the placeholders, and later I will replace it. Yeah, so artists that, let's say, hate AI, there is this massive movement of artists not liking AI, I think that they could actually use Fabler to create games with their own art and compete with the AI art. Yeah. And I think that's going to be a very unique proposition, because you're saying this game is like, you have mechanical watches, which are now super expensive, but they used to be normal thing, you know, like 80 years ago or 70 years ago. So I think that the AI art will be here, but the human-made art will be just very special, and people will appreciate it as human-made. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, like you alluded to at the very beginning of the podcast, is there's going to be, you know, for movies, for example, the human element's not going to be taken away, but it also AI is going to be there as well. So it's going to be a hybrid approach, and it could be the same way with artists, right? Like the artists can use AI to help them create their art, right? But if they don't embrace it, they might get left behind.
What I wanted to add here is that I think that making AI art is not just prompt. Yeah, actually, if you now will go to the tools that enable you, I think that Midjourney gives you this impression because they create a UX over making AI art that it seems like you are just creating a prompt. But if you go to open source tools that enable you to produce art, like we are working with AI art 24/7 at Fabler, and we cannot follow all of the technologies that are being released. I have like a document with 1,000 different releases, add-ons that you can use with the Stable Diffusion models and things. It's just impossible to catch up with all of the developments, and everything that is being released in some way will help you to make better generations, better outputs. And like, if let's say today you will decide, okay, let's build the characters pipeline for a game, that's not a prompt. You actually gonna have to do like some sort of, you know, AI engineering. Like, it's different, it's not the same like in this large companies you used to work for, where you have that data science team that was working. It's a little bit different, it's kind of engineering now, but you still will have to, you know, figure out the tooling, test this, check, you know, different metrics of what sampler works best, then use some, you know, a detailer that will help you with the details. If you do full post characters, the eyes will be bad, so you need to find solution to that, and there is, you know, some things that will work right for the scenes, but the lighting will be bad, so so it's not like you just prompt and generate art. It actually, like, I have one company that I'm helping with the, in general, getting up to speed with AI. So okay. I think it's already like 2 months of them working on the pipeline that they could implement in their game. That was not one day. The guy just didn't come, okay, let me prompt it, okay, problem solved. It's actually engineering, yeah? And I think that art, like, obviously, I understand why people are not happy with AI, because it's about to take their income away. But at the same time, they could actually learn all of that tools. And I promise them, if they will spend 24/7 learning how to learn all of those tools, they won't be able to keep up. It's not, you don't have enough time during the week to learn all of that. Yeah, there's so much of things that you gonna have to learn to be expert that can later join, I don't know, the CD Projekt and do AI art for them. It's not a prompt. Yeah, so
it's so hard to keep up with just the AI news in general. So there's new tools and features and news all the time. So it's impossible. Like, we deal with that, you know, we write a simple newsletter and it's hard to keep up with everything. So I can't imagine what it is for gaming, but I think you bring up a good point. Like, there's tools for editing, for example, where, you know, 5 years ago, it would be very hard to take the background out of an image. If you want to just put your face on an image and have the background gone or change the background. Well, AI makes that very easy now, but it's not a prompt. Like you said, you have to actually go into a tool and, you know, select things that you want removed, or say, I want the background removed, and it does that for you. So it's like it seems like these tools for gaming as well are supercharged in the editor. And the AI makes those things easier within the editor, but you're not writing a prompt. You're not just writing prompts, create me a game and, you know, voila, it's done.
I will tell you what my kind of take on that is. I think that games made just with AI will be good. Mm-hmm. But games that are made assisted by AI, but they're human made, will be great. Like, to, sure. Like, even you can, like, in general, like, you are in AI, so there's this agent kind of approach to dealing with AI, where you have multiple agents talking to each other. So I think that currently the thing is that you always need a human input to make it good. So you cannot, like, we've experienced this initially when we are trying to do, like, obviously things are changing, and maybe this year things will change. But at the moment, I like, even if you try to create with state of the art open AI architecture where you will try to delegate something for, you know, 1 month to AI and have that AI do meaningful things, it won't, because you're gonna have to direct it somewhere. Yeah, so you still have a human somewhere that directs the output or tells that he's not happy. And I think that in general, even with what we do, is the best things made will be when actually someone has some vision and uses Fabler as something that multiplies, makes it 100 times faster for him, but it's still his vision. Yeah. Obviously, you know, I was not expecting Sora to be so good. So maybe something will happen soon. But at the moment, I think people are needed, and the content that is directed by people who have vision, ideas, that would be the best content. Yeah. Like, even like if you use ChatGPT today to do a PowerPoint, you will see that you're going to have to do a lot of prompting before you will get the idea that you want out of it. It's not like a create a PowerPoint, amazing, you know, PowerPoint for me. And then what you're going to see is, okay, I don't like this. And you keep interacting and you spend like 1 hour iterating, and ChatGPT is just assistant helping you, not making it for you.
Sometimes it might take you longer to do all those edits for an hour than just create the PowerPoint in the first place, you know? So
yeah, I was thinking the same. Last night I was working on the PowerPoint.
And I like another very important thing that, you know, I've come to realize by doing YouTube videos is, you know, you can have all the data in the world and you can have all these LLMs spitting out PowerPoints, or you have Sora make videos for you and the videos look amazing. You know, it's not released to the general public yet, but the examples that we've seen are pretty mind-blowing. But you still need a story behind that, right? And most of those stories, the good stories out there, come from human beings. It's hard from my experience, to have ChatGPT tell a very good story that I could use for a video, for example. So my point is, you can have all the best data and the output in the world from AI, but you need a human touch to tell the story behind it.
And I believe the same. And to be honest with you, also, I think that the like, at least in Fabler, from the creator's perspective, creators, yeah, because the viewer is different thing. We need to get there, you know, to explain whether viewers like what the creators create. We can see that the creator is engaged where he actually interacts with the system. So when initially, like, there is this new kind of vertical of that influencer created something and he wants to use that as input to create something. But again, is someone, creator is happy when he creates. Like, and the good creators are good at creating. That's why they are successful. Yeah. And they want to create. They need to, like, I think that this is very unlikely that creator who hates to create content is successful. He doesn't like. So you need to have this vibe, you know, I want to create this video. I want to get in the front of camera or get in the go outside, record. You need to have a passion for it. Yeah. So now there is some passion somewhere happens, and that passion is being fed into a system. Yeah. So, and when we initially, our initial idea was initial January 2023, was to create a system that creates games on its own. Yeah, so you like give a prompt and keep iterating. There was this agent, but when we were doing initial tests with people, they were just engaged. They were just coming back to that initial prompt. Yeah, they were not even checking the story that was generated, but they were seeing the first kind of outputs and they were hitting back and reprompting, and then seeing them and reprompting. So they were like, so we've noticed was, okay, so they are not very even interested about the story, but they are more interested how it reacts to their input. So they need, there must be control over what they create, yeah, because this is what is fun for them. Yeah. So creator wants to create. If you take it away from him, he will probably not come to your system to create, because there is no point for him to create.
Right.
Obviously, if you have created a long form video and that video is the input. And then, so you've spent time over creating that video and you fed that video into Fabler and Fabler created the things for you. That is also your input, yeah? But at that point, yeah, so I think that people want to interact with those systems. It's like, you know, calculator makes things easier for you, like spreadsheet.
Yeah. If you are a good creator and you're passionate about what you do, and you do have a story created by OpenAI, for example, on ChatGPT or Claude.ai or any of these models, you read them and you can tell the stories, as being a good creator, you can tell the stories are kind of crap, right? And like, and then you go back and you have to reprompt it and say, change this and change that. So I think it's almost like a, it's a human thing, right? Part of us wants to be as lazy as possible and have to do all this work for us. But the bottom line is, the stories that do the best are the ones that have the passion behind them. And if you don't have that, your content's not going to do well, whether it's AI created or on your own, you know?
I 100% agree. And also I like to look at the, like when you deal with AI, I like to kind of use this reference of, if you have three people in the team, the smartest guys in, let's say, in the USA are in the room.
Okay.
And you get them to work together, so you have the smartest minds. Mm-hmm. They will also kind of will start arguing, no, you are wrong, I'm right, you know, this is how we should do it. And so, like, even if you create the best AI model that knows everything, it's still not good enough. Because if you put three smartest people in the room, they will still have different perspectives. So there's no, like, people look at AI and they say, this is a singular source of truth. Not like it should know it's right about everything, but the world is not black and white, you know, that's the problem. Yeah, that you, three things at the same time can be true. And here is the problem, that you need someone to decide, okay, out of these 10 best things created by AI, this is the best thing for me and for my content, and that other things are not really good in my context, in my very specific environment, and so on. Yeah. So I even believe if we have a kind of, you know, AGI, like, you know, like super AI that can, you know, do everything, still people will be needed, because if you put three smartest people in the room, they will still... there is still room for, you know, discussions, decision making, and figuring out what is right. Yes,
and all those. It seems like AI is not good at subtleties, right? Like in a movie, there might be something moving on the screen, very subtle in the background, that makes a big part of the story. Well, AI might not be the best at doing that, you know, even in Sora, something like that. So those subtleties make a big difference.
I was like looking when Sora was released, I was with my wife in the room and I showed her this. We were just discussing that if you take Tarantino movie, like scenes from Tarantino movie, it's going to be very hard to replicate this because there are such a small things that play a difference that replicating that's going to be super hard. You can still use it to, you know, for some scenes, but there are like very, very small things. Like if you analyze the Tarantino is just example, but if you analyze his movie, there are very, very, very small details that make it a great movie. Yeah, very small details.
Exactly, and that's gonna be very hard for AI to replicate.
Yeah, but what I think Sora will do is it will empower the small guys. I mean, like these casual creators to create something meaningful that can probably get them later a capital to create a professional movies, like very professional movies. Yeah, because I think that AI really, what it does is it empowers the people that want to learn and can probably give like, let's say you have a person in whatever very poor country that doesn't have a resources to create such content, and that person learns the tools and learns how to use Sora, but not just Sora, it learns different tools, how to edit it, how to align it. That person spends 6 months on creating best movie possible with the tools. So this is something that is great. And I think that AI really will definitely shrink revenue of that larger, you know, movie producers, but will also empower the small, small producers that are now not capable. Yeah, because if you cannot afford the even camera to record mm-hmm. the movie, you will never create it. And with Sora, like this is my idea in general. Yeah, that you could actually empower this people that are now without any power. Yeah,
and those people might have back to the passion. Those people probably have way more passion than the big Hollywood studios do. So they're, the end result, I think, is a win-win for everyone. It's a win for the creators and also the people viewing the content, because the content most likely will be more interesting because the creators that created the content are passionate about it, Now they're enabled to make it because they don't need the money per se.
I'm really looking forward, to seeing, first movie that you can, because at the moment,